Hello, lovely folks of audio loving joy, and welcome to the Pulse Award Welcome Trust funded Anyone for Coffee with me, Sarah Golding.
Episode 8.
Sorry, I won't sing again.
Episode 8.
I do hope, in the grand scheme of things, you're having a half decent week at least. I'm not going to lie, I've been struggling a bit with this crazy world right now, with the best of us, but, you know, we soldier on, right? Yes.
Episode 8.
And I do want to say very loudly and very clearly, Black Lives Matter. Trans Lives Matter. And you, lovely listener, you matter very much to me, too.
Episode 8.
So here is the next of three episodes on epilepsy with the wonderful Lucy Shirley. Isn't she amazing? Sharing more of her own life story with the condition and looking at her school days and beyond. Matthew Walker is back, talking all things mental health and epilepsy, as well as how to recognise some of the signs and symptoms, which mean you should seek further professional help. But first, 2 hour audio fiction. Oh, what do you think's happened to Rachel? Oh, she's awake. She's okay. She's sore, a bit groggy, and still in hospital. And Charlie has come to visit with a flask of homemade coffee. Hopefully a lot less panicky now. Enjoy. Your skin is so beautiful.
Thanks, mate. Nice coffee.
Yeah, it's my own flask. It's better than the machine shite downstairs. We've been coming every day since you had the
fits.
5 days in here, no Netflix. Oh, poor you. You want another hospital pillow or wedge pillow thing or whatever this is?
No, I'm all right.
You're bloody amazing, you are.
You going full leather on me now?
Oh, do you want me to? Because right now I do pretty much anything to you because you fucking scared me so much.
I've never heard you swear the F one.
I saw you there. You came out of the kitchen and then you just like dropped and you cracked your head on the wall and then kept banging it and you were like all everywhere and sick and... And I thought you were going to die and I didn't know what to do. And I've never felt so hopeless and so sick, so like a shit friend. I should have known what to do.
No, no. I should have told you it could be a possibility. Save you some worry. I mean, to be honest, I just did it for a bit of attention.
Yeah. Next time, just go, oh, look at my face. Something instead. I don't think my heart has ever beat that fast. I lost all the saliva in my mouth.
So typical.
What?
You're making it all about you again. Let's focus on me again, shall we?
Oh, shit, sorry.
You're such a dickhead.
Thank you.
Thank you, Charlie.
For what?
Don't know, really. Just your... you, I suppose.
It's all I know how to do. Do you want a biscuit?
No.
Can you eat yet?
Gotcha. Or I'd starve.
How's your head?
Sore.
So... when did you have your first thingy, wibbly fit? Because that wasn't your first then.
School.
Nasty.
Yeah. Is your eye sore?
Bit.
Sorry about clocking you on.
Sorry.
You know not to get in the way next.
Well, don't say next time, okay? They're going to sort you out, yeah? The nurse outside said you went for an MRI, so that should tell them things, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember it, your first?
Let me think. Yeah, I mean, not the actual fit, but bits of it. It was just a fairly normal school day from what I can remember. GCSE time, so it was fairly stressful. and I was in history class. I sat next to probably one of the most timid, really, really quiet girls in my year. I can't remember her name now, Rosie or something. And I remember people like looking at me as I just started to sing. I think the concern was I'd actually taken something.
What, drugs?
Yeah, I hadn't. Why does everyone always assume that I've taken something?
I guess because your behaviour isn't what's expected of the usual you, maybe?
No, I just get high naturally, me. But apparently I started singing.
The poor bleeding ears.
I was shouting and gesturing. But whether that was just a twitch, I don't know. NQT went into panic stations, and then I was falling and fitting and out of it. And I was told afterwards that one of the girls said,
"Rachel's dying."
I just kept hitting my leg against the metal table, and obviously the room was full of shock and, oh my God.
Miss, what should we do, miss?
And Miss didn't have a clue. She just sat there with her mouth hanging open and closing, and then like fiddled with her pens, so I was told. And then the quiet girl who sat next to me said,
"Move everything out of her way. Tables, chairs, you. Show me your big coat, the one without the zips. And yours, that felt one, quick. We need to stop her from banging on anything that's going to hurt her. It shouldn't last very much longer, but she doesn't need an audience, so why don't you all go outside and line up outside the next class? Lisa, go and get Mr. Parker, will you? And you two, why don't you go and tell the school nurse? Miss and I can stay with her, huh? Okay, off you go. Okay, Rachel, that's it. You're okay, that's it. Well done. I'm going to put the other coat under your head here. Well done."
And apparently I was wheeled through the school. I'm actually still very proud of the fact that I'm the only student to have ever used the evac chair, ever. Oh, my jaw hurts from all that clenching. No French kissing for me tonight, I guess.
Why didn't you tell us you had this, Rachel? Because I feel like I just wanted to...
I suppose I just wasn't sure how to explain it. Saying you have epilepsy to anyone probably means they're going to assume that you're going to just shake, rattle and roll any flashing lights and be fitting every few minutes. But, well, thankfully mine is a lot less prevalent than that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I guess if you did tell me, I'd be worried about doing something to trigger you or whatever. But also, like, if you had told me then, I'd know what to do because you'd tell me. Can you see?
For years, I didn't know I had epilepsy. Before my first grand mal seizure, I was experiencing what I didn't realise was absent seizures. I thought I was going mad, to be honest.
So what does it feel like, an absent seizure?
It's hard to describe, being honest.
Sure. Does it hurt?
No, it's more like a really strong sense of déjà vu.
You can say that again.
The way that I would describe it is like déjà vu. You lose all perspective on who is around you. You can be in the most familiar of surroundings, but everything just feels unfamiliar.
That sounds terrifying. It's like a horror film or something. I mean, how would I know you're having one of these absence things?
To the outward eye, you probably wouldn't realise at that stage what I was experiencing because I probably kept it together. I guess your face kind of goes like a mask. I might have looked a little bit anxious, perhaps, but you wouldn't probably realise until I had a full-blown seizure. Basically, I go all quiet.
Yeah, well, that is unusual.
So when it comes on, I get all agoraphobic. I want to find a corner or a small room to make me feel more secure. Mm. I suppose because it's similar to what I imagine a panic attack might be like, but perhaps it's a similar sensation that the whole world feels really big and you just feel really small.
Oh, that's scary. So a few times when I've seen you acting just fleetingly odd, you've been like in a little trance, I guess, sometimes. I just thought you were, I don't know, tired or... I know you're on some drugs, so I thought that was the norm for whatever those were, but I thought they were for depression and stuff. I mean, do you get depressed about it? I mean, does it hurt when it happens?
It's not painful. Well, emotionally, yes, it is painful because of the cluelessness of what's going on, and it almost feels like you're listening to the world through, like, in a bit like a tinny sort of sensation.
Yeah.
So conversations would be going on, and I would not be able to maintain a conversation very well whilst I was experiencing it. And I'd get quiet, and when I said deja vu, I would sometimes be sitting there and I wouldn't necessarily know who would be going to say something, but in my head I'd be thinking of this random phrase and it wouldn't mean anything to me. And then somebody would say it, and then I just started to think, am I psychic?
She's a witch! Burn her!
Shut up. But yeah, and I can see why in years gone by people associated epilepsy with witchcraft, because it felt almost psychic.
Wow. Yeah, but there's so much we don't know about the brain and its capabilities, I guess. Do you know anyone else with it, epilepsy? I mean, like, have you tried to physically, psychically connect?
No. No, I don't know anyone.
Okay, what am I thinking? Right, it's an object. What is it?
Oh, don't be stupid.
Oh, no, go on, try.
I'm not a puppet.
Go on, guess, go on.
Chocolate or beer?
Holy shit, you are psychic.
No, you're just so predictable.
Maybe not in bed.
I don't want to know. Thanks for taking my mind off things. I can't be the only one who experiences this kind of feeling. I mean, a minute ago, I was in my house, and then I'm here. It's confusing. I've been unconscious, and God knows what you saw me do, and I'm sure that was worrying for you.
It really was.
Good news is, I don't have a tumour or anything nasty.
Hooray! Yeah, I'd be so shit at running marathons to raise money for you. Sorry, that's a weird thing to say.
It's not weird. Not for you. You are weird.
Yeah. Long live the weirds.
Apparently I have a normal brain.
Oh, can't believe that. I've seen your dance moves. They're not normal.
Maybe they should have a look at your brain.
Oh, I'd break the machine. Oh. So hooray, she's okay. Do you think Charlie was right to be frustrated Rachel didn't tell her, or is she being a bit self-centred again? What do you think? Well, do let us know what you think of these episodes. Please, please do. We'd love to hear from you. Just ping us an email to quirkyvoices@gmail.com. So love to hear from you. And or maybe we could even get your thoughts on an episode soon. So thanks for anyone who has pinged in some thoughts and information. Sure. Now to Lucy herself. Oh, my aching womb. Yeah, here. Lucy talks of the school event that transpired as a result of a major seizure happening in a history class, and who she's talked to tell of her condition, and she also shares her upbeat view of living with the condition. Here's Lucy.
Because I have had them, I had one at school,
okay,
which was probably the worst one, actually, just from the fear factor of having to return to school, right. And it was around the age of 14, 15.
Oh, so right in the middle of
puberty
and how you look.
Exactly.
And so it was in a lesson?
It was in a lesson. A perfectly normal day from what I can remember. It was GCSE, so it was, again, fairly stressful. And apparently, I think on that occasion, they thought I'd taken something as well. So it's interesting because I've got a real clean sheet with my record, and yet everyone assumes that I've taken something.
Because you're so happy.
Yeah, well, again, at university, it was assumed I'd taken something when it happened. So, but I promise I haven't natural high, just the buzz of a history lesson. But apparently, I started shouting in the classroom.
Oh, God. That sounds different.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been something that I would do. I think there was maybe a bit of a twitch, but the main thing was that I was shouting and I think gesturing. But whether that was just a twitch, I don't know. The teacher was actually an NQT.
Okay.
And from what I'm told, went into panic stations.
Right.
And it was actually a student that took charge of the room, got everyone out, okay, and put me down and calmed the teacher down. So it was, it was just lucky that this girl happened to be in the class at the right time. But I was probably sitting next to one of the most timid girls that I could find in my year.
Okay.
And when I came round and realised what had happened, I was mortified that it had to happen sitting next to her. Oh. It was, I thought I probably scared the life out of her. But it was, if I could have picked any class to not have this experience in, it would have been this class. It was full of a lot of people that I didn't know very well. Some of them were more of the alternative end of the school scale, and certainly weren't people that I would have hung around with and I would have assumed would be quite judgmental.
And that's everything at that age,
isn't it? I can remember I went home early that day because naturally I wasn't fit to go back in the classroom, but I dreaded coming in on the next day that I came back because I thought the reaction of the class I'm gonna have, there would have been a lot of people in that room that I hadn't told that I don't think the teacher knew, although it was on my record.
I
wouldn't have gone into the classroom and said, excuse me miss, I've got epilepsy. It just wouldn't have happened. But I couldn't have been more wrong at the reception of the class. I had people that I'd never had conversations with more than just, you know, exchanging a glance or talking in the classroom, coming up to me asking if I was okay. I heard that there were multiple children, students crying because they were so scared. And that's the thing. It's worse for the people around to see all of this going on and be confused or uncertain at what's going on.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because I know my daughter's school, there's various students who have various things that affect them daily, and they often have meetings or assembly points. I mean, did the school do anything to raise awareness at that point, do you know?
No, not that I'm aware of, actually.
Okay. Do you think that
should happen? Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's funny because it never actually occurred to me, but 100% it should have. I mean, even if it was a case of the teaching staff had a refresher on what to do in the case of an epileptic seizure. It's a refresher case like that probably would have been beneficial. But yeah, no, there was nothing done to raise awareness or just to explain what had happened.
And is there a school nurse at that point? Did you get
that? Was where I went. I went to the nurse. Yeah.
So it's lucky because a lot of schools have that facility and that person, that contact point taken away, don't they?
Yeah.
And that's, I think, disgraceful because
in that situation, I know that there's funding issues and there's always shortages in schools.
Yep.
But, you know, I say about the incontinence, I could have had an episode like that I lost control of my, you know, bladder or something. And where would you take a student like that? Through all of the other students and add further embarrassment and you know, worsen the situation? Thankfully, that didn't happen. But yeah, without a nurse or an adequate facility for that, it could have been dreadful.
Yeah. I mean, also just thinking about your point earlier about actually getting in the next day and worrying, you know, and that mentally is quite a big hill to climb, I'd imagine.
I was really nervous. I knew that it would have been travelled around. I think it was around the time all of the year had history or geography at the same time and the faculty was all on the same floor. So everyone would have heard the commotion and I'm sure been concerned, but would have, I mean, I'm still to this day, I believe, the only pupil to have used the evac chair in this school. So it's a crown that I'm quite proud of.
Named after you.
Yeah. Inaugural. The deputy head, you had to wheel me down. So, you know, proud of that, of course. But sadly, I didn't think that claim would have much weight and influence in the opinion of others. I don't think I went in the next day purely because I was exhausted. But I think also because of the thought of, I think it happened on a Thursday. So the coming in on the Friday wouldn't have made sense.
Okay.
But then sometimes having then an extra long period of time makes it worse because then you think, I don't want to come back.
Yeah, I mean, it's a time before mobile phones.
It was the time of MSN. Do you remember MSN Messenger?
I knew.
MySpace, possibly.
Yeah. Yeah, he nailed me. Wow. So yeah, I mean, that communication, you know, as is today, as you're today, you know, if that could happen, people would be filming it potentially as an event.
Yeah. I mean, it could go the other way. It could have been that I was inundated with messages of get well soon. Absolutely. and I hope you're okay, which was the reaction when I went in. But kids can be cruel, and I automatically assumed that the reception I would get would have been a cruel one. And there wasn't one student that I came across that even made the slightest joke, or I think I scared them all.
Okay.
In truth, and I think the fear of it actually extinguished any humour in the situation, which there isn't any humour anyway, but children can find, you know, and even out of nervousness some people laugh. It's a sort of an involuntary reflex, isn't it, to laugh. As a kid I used to laugh when I got told off, and it wasn't because I found it funny, it was just
kind of come out as this. You're so right.
But there wasn't even any of that. So,
well, hooray for the students of that school. I think that's completely. And I would hope that other folks who are having similar would have a similar support.
I really hope so. I really hope so, because it's enough, you know, as a teenager, you've got more than enough on your plate with, you know, exams. Growing up, trying to work out your status
friendship
quo and where you fit in and falling out over this, that and the other, and trying to manage that as well was at times quite difficult. It probably got worse as I got a little bit older, and although it didn't bother me too much, things like not being able to drive at 17.
I was going to say, has it stopped you doing anything specifically?
It did. I wasn't seizure-free. And also, I think it knocked my confidence a little bit. So even if I was seizure-free, I don't think I would have had confidence to have got a driving licence and tried to pass my test, just out of fear that it could happen again. Because the majority of I've only had 7 seizures, grand mal seizures in my life, and they all have happened around the teenage years. So it was quite a busy time for that going on. So it probably didn't do me any harm actually waiting a few years. And I went to university as well, didn't really need a car, wouldn't have had anywhere to park it, couldn't have afforded it, so circumstances wouldn't have really required one anyway. But when I came back from uni and I got a job and I was able to learn, I started learning and thought, we'll try it. And then I had a seizure the week before my driving test.
Yeah, so it's just fascinating, isn't it, the times it's chosen to manage.
Yeah, and then, of course, it's 2 years, 18 months free of seizures before you can try and do it again. So it's, but I'm driving now.
Yes.
And I have been for a few years. So taken lots of years, but we've got there.
Oh, you seem in like a good place at the minute. Would you say I'm not the good place, but are you a good place, would you say right now? Would you feel
like I am in a good place? I've always been quite lucky in that I've never been too affected by it, as far as my mental health is concerned.
Right.
I've accepted it. I'm lucky. I've got a good support network at home.
I was going to say, is that a big part?
Oh,
really?
100%. My friends and family, no one has ever made me feel different or not normal, whatever normal is.
I'm probably
not, regardless. But it's good not to be normal. It makes you different. It makes you special.
A bit quirky. No, I mean, that's brilliant. The people that support folks who have any specific condition, I think, can make a massive difference. And I mean, is there anyone specifically that if you are in a bad place, who would support you and who would... And what do they do to be helpful?
I don't... Oh, it sounds awful to say it, but I would say no, because there's very little. It's more when a full-blown seizure occurs, that's when you need someone. But because it's all very inside, I would always, with select people, I would say after it happened what I was experiencing.
Right.
But that's probably limited to just close family, I would say. I probably wouldn't share that with my friends, if I'm being honest. And that's not because I wouldn't trust them or anything, but it's normally because when the moment's happening, you couldn't put it into words. And when it's passed, you think, okay, that's gone now and it's okay. But I'm a very upbeat person.
Yes, I agree. You're light to be around. You know, I think there's a lot of people who I think I've met through this particular place, St. Peter Players in Chalfont, and you're one of the buoyant people who lift a room. So,
well, I try. You know, it's hard. You can't always be happy and bouncy. Mm. And don't get me wrong, I have a day where I'm not very nice to be around. I'm sure they happen fairly frequently.
Thursday every fourth year.
But I do try, and I think it's important to not let whatever condition you have to define you. I think it's important to be honest about what you have and try where possible to not feel embarrassed and to share, especially with something like epilepsy, because if the worst happens, people need to know how to deal with it. And people could think it was anaphylactic shock. They could think that I had taken something. But to know, actually, no, she is epileptic and she's having a seizure, I think is important. So mm-hmm. I've always been open with my employers and my friends and family about what I have.
And things like job applications and things like that, do you have to put it down on that as a medical condition?
I don't know whether you, because of equal opportunities, and I work in the construction industry, mm-hmm. so going on construction sites, obviously I never go on the site on my own because my job doesn't call for it. Mm-hmm. However, I would always share it with the site just in case, because obviously circumstances would be different if something was to happen there.
Sure.
Mind you, I'd have a hard hat on, so I suppose, you know, the protection is probably a bit better. Lots of men on site to save you. but no, I think I probably wouldn't disclose it on a job application, but if I got the job, I would tell my employer.
Mm, interesting. And as far as people who are listening who have this manifesting in whatever way it might do, what kind of advice would you give them to live their best life?
Be proud of yourself. I know it sounds corny, but like I've said, I am proud of who I am, and I would like to hope that for every two people that are embarrassed by what they might be suffering with, there's someone there who is proud and trying to be supportive in hope that it encourages them to be a little bit more proud and understanding and sympathetic to themselves. Mm-hmm. I've got friends that suffer from epilepsy as well and hide it and don't tell anyone. Okay. And I think when we discussed that, it was interesting the two different ideas of I wouldn't tell anyone, and I don't tell the world, but I haven't got a t-shirt saying I'm epileptic. Mm. But I've never seen it as a cause for embarrassment or anything to hide.
You've taken it as it's a part of you.
And
to share when you feel,
I think, out of the fear. I think it probably comes back to having so many years of not knowing what it was, that I think I'd rather people just knew what it was. And if my story can help others to understand what they might be going through, then I hope it's useful.
Brilliant. Well, I think you are amazing.
Thank you.
Very excited to have you on this show to talk about it. So thank you so much for giving up some
Thank you, Sarah. Well, I'm proud to be invited on.
Well, yes. Well, you know, keep living your best life and being inspiring, because you are.
Oh, thanks so much to Lucy for sharing these experiences and thoughts. Now, if you agree or want to share your experience, do let us know. I love a ping on at Quirky Voices on Twitter, if you like. And if you can help us get this podcast to the people we made it for by sharing it everywhere, that's my son singing. It's great. Just going to keep that in. it's bedtime. If to the tune of my son singing, whatever that is, you can help us get this podcast to the people we made it for by sharing it everywhere, we'd love you even more than we already do for listening. Thank you. So here's the lovely Matthew Walker of UCL London Hospitals and the massive list of beautiful things that he does in the realms of epilepsy. And he mentions he has a book out too. So do check that one out, as mentioned, and links to all of the things we talk about are on the Quirky Voices website, links of which are on our show notes. And, well, here we talk about how folks can help themselves and how to recognise the signs and symptoms of the condition. Firstly, I asked him if there was any other networking opportunities for folks with epilepsy and, well, was that important for folks to do?
It is. it's very useful. And I think the thing that people will find is that many of the problems that they feel may be unique to them are often shared by others with epilepsy.
Yeah.
And there are, in many areas, local groups that meet and discuss, you know, the challenges that they have.
Mm-hmm.
They also raise funds for various of the charities. And certainly it would be worthwhile trying to get involved or trying to get engaged with one of those groups.
Yeah.
Epilepsy Action organise a number of groups around the country, but
right. You
may well find that in your region that there is also a local epilepsy group that has just been started by somebody. And if there isn't one, then it would be a good idea to organise one.
Yes.
Because I think
get proactive.
These groups, they are very, very helpful.
Yeah.
And it's very helpful to share many of the experiences that people have.
Yes.
And realise that many of the things that people experiences say are not unique to them, but also can be part of the condition. I think this is especially so with things like anxiety and depression.
Yes.
And irritability and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, I know in our podcast we explore the fact that the character that Lucy plays in the audio fiction part hasn't told her friends that she has epilepsy. So at the beginning of the episode that you've just heard, she has a seizure, and they have no clue how to deal with the situation. And so I feel the important part of that for me is to educate people, really, to share perhaps elements of, you know, the condition and how people can be most useful to the person having the seizure if one is occurring. What would you suggest people do in that situation if a friend of theirs does, wherever it may happen, experience a seizure?
First of all, say things not to do.
Yes.
I mean, if somebody's having a convulsion, it's important not to put anything into their mouth.
Yeah.
And this idea that a person may swallow their tongue is completely misjudged.
Right.
And if you put anything into their mouth, their teeth usually clamp down tight.
Mm.
If you put your fingers in, you'll get them bitten.
Yeah.
If you put something hard in, they'll break their teeth. And sadly, I have a number of patients who've got quite considerable dental damage.
Oh, goodness.
People shoving things into their mouths during seizures.
Right.
So the most important thing is, first of all, to make sure that the person's in a safe place,
mm-hmm.
and that they're not going to hurt or injure their head. So if they're in an enclosed space, maybe trying to move them into a space which is safer, or if they're in a precarious position where they may fall, to try and get them down onto the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And then really to stay with them during the seizure. And almost all seizures will last less than 2 minutes,
right.
But it may seem that the seizure is going on just endlessly because it's a frightening thing to see.
Yeah.
So if people can do, timing the seizure is helpful, and if the seizure lasts longer than 5 minutes, or if the person has repeated seizures without recovery in between, then it's important that an ambulance is called.
Yes.
But otherwise, if somebody's known to have epilepsy and they have a seizure, a frustrating thing for many of my patients as well is that every time they have a seizure, somebody calls an ambulance and they end up suddenly with the ambulance men, or worse of all, in hospital.
Right.
As I say, because most of them will just terminate quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the seizure, certainly if it's a big seizure, then it's be important just to roll the person to the left-hand side. At that point, make sure that their airway is clear and that they're breathing, and then stay with the person until they're fully recovered, which usually takes a number of minutes, but can take up to 20 minutes until the person's properly orientated and knows where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the things that I would suggest. So I think the problem that my patients have encountered, I certainly know of, is that people want to intervene too much. The important thing is just to be there with the person, make sure that they're safe, and make sure that they're fully recovered at the end.
Yes.
But not to go in and shove things in people's mouths, or as one patient of mine had chest compressions during the middle of the seizure, and that, you know, that resulted in a broken rib and other problems. So, you know, I think it's just really to take that approach.
Yeah, so make sure they're safe.
But one of the things you pointed to there, I think it's very important, is that I think there's a large amount of ignorance about epilepsy. And I think there are a number of reasons for that. One of which is that although we'd like to think that prejudice against people with epilepsy has largely gone in society, it's not. It's still there.
Mm-hmm.
People still meet prejudice in the workplace. And
because
of that, many people with epilepsy may hide the condition from friends or work colleagues. And that's not a good thing, because you say if the seizure occurs, they may be a shock, they may not know what to do. So if it is possible to discuss it with them or in some way to get the workplace engaged, then that would be important. And again, a number of the charities, Epilepsy Action in particular, can help with that. And it's worth discussing that with either one of their helplines or with one of the members of those charities to see how education can be increased in the workplace and also in schools as well.
Well, I was going to say, yes, we explore that in our interview with Lucy, as well as in the audio fiction, that her first experience was in a school history lesson. And it was an inexperienced teacher, allegedly, who didn't know what to do, essentially. And one of the students apparently took charge and sorted everyone out and got everyone out and dealt with the situation very maturely. And I just wonder, because I am a teacher, have been a teacher in schools, how much more should be done, really, just to raise awareness across the school of what to do in the event of such an occasion and how we can help raise awareness that maybe if you are working in a school and listening to this and you don't know what to do, maybe it's worth raising with your team and to help people get educated in case one of your students or teachers or visiting people experience one of these and people are at least aware of what to do.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's absolutely critical. In most large schools, there'll be, you know, at least a number of pupils who will have seizures or epilepsy or the chance of having seizures. And so I think it is important that all teachers are aware. And so there's information out there. There are information packages for schools. Young Epilepsy produces, I think, an information package for schools, as does Epilepsy Action and other charities. So the information is available and there is help there to try and get that information across to, you know, members of staff in schools, and I would certainly encourage it. And I also think it's useful for, you know, students and pupils to be aware of the condition as well, because it's something that almost everyone will meet in sometime in their lives. They will see, either, as I say, there's a significant chance of even yourself developing it at some point in your life, but also it's very likely that somebody you know or one of your relatives will likely have it, or you like to see seizure in front of you. And so it's, I think it's important for all people to be educated about this. And there's plenty of material out there, so I think it would be nice to try and get that disseminated.
Super. And with regards to other forms of information, are there any books that you would perhaps suggest are great for people to read, or any other media that people should listen to, read, follow, or people in the public eye who, you know, are very fervent supporters of raising that epilepsy awareness banner?
Yeah, so there's a lot there. Obviously, I'd like to plug my own book.
Please do. Yes.
Understanding Epilepsy.
Why not?
we produced a little book called Understanding Epilepsy. You know, and it's a short thing that people could read in a day or two.
Right.
I mean, if you go onto, you know, to any bookstore or chemist, there are plenty of books. There's no lack of information out there, I think. What I think is the problem is that people are not engaging with that information. And as I say, because people sometimes may be scared of the prejudice of epilepsy, they may hide their epilepsy. Many people, prominent people that I know have epilepsy, keep it very quiet.
Really?
Because they feel that there may be prejudice towards them because
Goodness.
Of it. But there are people who have spoken out about difficulties of epilepsy. There are many parents who've spoken out about the difficulties of having, you know, a child with difficult epilepsy.
Yes.
Or difficult to control epilepsy. And, you know, most notably recently, David Cameron, of course, son sadly died from epilepsy. So I think it's, you know, I think there's information that's out there.
Yeah.
And I just think it's a matter of trying to engage with it.
Fantastic. Thank you. How can someone start to recognise that they do need help? What are the signs and signals that that people should then think, oh, OK, I need to speak to a doctor?
The first thing, obviously, anybody who has an episode of loss of consciousness, and it's not, you know, it's not just a simple faint or something, they should seek medical help. And the other thing, of course, if they're driving, they should stop driving at that point until somebody's told them that it is, again, safe to drive.
Yes.
But I would at that point seek medical help from the GP, and then if it's likely to be a seizure, the person will be referred on to the hospital. And there are first seizure clinics in many hospitals that will see people very quickly and are very efficient in getting the investigations done. And the people who are running those clinics have great expertise in both diagnosing and explaining what the episode may have been.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other side of the coin is people are having, it's not that they've blacked out or collapsed or lost consciousness or whatever, it's that they're just having these slightly strange episodes. And I think quite often people tend to ignore them. So I see many people who come to me following their first, sort of convulsion, who then say, well, in fact, for a number of months, I've been having these slightly odd experiences, but I thought nothing of them or I ignored them. And I think if you start to get, manifestation depends upon where in the brain the seizure is occurring.
Mm-hmm.
And a very common place for seizures to actually begin is in the temporal lobe, which is to do with memory. So experiences like very strong deja vu,
mm-hmm.
sudden onset of sort of panics or fear without any obvious reason.
Right.
Can also be a manifestation as well. So all these sorts of rather intense, stereotypical and short-lived episodes, if they're happening and there's no good reason for them to happen, it would be worthwhile seeking out help before you go on to have a major seizure and mm-hmm. getting it diagnosed early.
Yes.
And again, that will often require going to the GP, and then the GP will often refer on to a neurologist for the person to be assessed.
Yes.
Depending on what the episodes are.
And it's probably worth, if that is happening to you, to maybe make a note of the time and place it happened, and perhaps for how long and what feelings and thoughts you were having, perhaps. And then you have a record to take to your GP to say, these things have happened and I'm very worried, perhaps.
Yeah, no, exactly. A good record of what has occurred. You need a good description of what's occurred. And as I say, if you had loss of awareness for any sense of any time, then it's good to get a written description, have somebody come along with you who can describe what occurred, or the number, the telephone number of somebody who can be called during the consultation just to give a good description. Because in the end, what we usually base the diagnosis on is a description of exactly what occurred, because the other investigations may be normal in between the events.
Mm.
So those are really quite critical things in terms of making the diagnosis.
Right, fantastic, thank you. And is there anything else that you would offer as positive advice for somebody who's going through the day-to-day with epilepsy?
Yeah, so I think the first thing to say to many people without epilepsy is just how devastating the condition can be. That even when people are having infrequent seizures, the problem that people have is just not knowing when they will occur. It's just like having that sort of Damocles just hanging there ready to fall at any moment.
Yes.
So along with that goes concerns about having a seizure. People can become quite isolated because of it.
Right.
And so that's really for people who don't have epilepsy. For those people who do have epilepsy, as I say, we can get the vast majority of people seizure-free with medication that should have minimal side effects.
Yeah.
And for those people who we can't get seizure-free, there have been great advances being made at the moment in methods to try and cure the epilepsy, and those include surgical methods. So sometimes we can remove small bits of the brain to get the epilepsy better, but also other therapies that are being developed at the moment. And although things may look quite bleak now, I have to say from where I sit, the future does look bright.
Good.
It looks like that we're actually on the cusp of making some big breakthroughs in getting people better.
Fantastic. Well, let's hope that continues to go in the right direction, and that anyone listening who's having any issues right now, I hope that you can, with some of the help that we've listed over the last few episodes, can find other people to talk to help yourself get informed, so that you can kind of have the most positive life at the moment is available to you as a sufferer and a non-sufferer. And I think the key thing for me there, Matthew, as well, was regards to the people who haven't got it. And I think if you do know your friend is at the moment having, various issues, maybe just give them a call and just fathom how they're doing, because, times right now are especially crazy for everyone. But perhaps the isolation at the moment for folks suffering from this particular condition are also even more concerning. So go and give your pals a call, why don't you? And your family members. I think that's very important.
It's important for people to try and lead as full a life as possible, not to let the condition control them.
Yes. Yeah, superb advice. Well, thank you so much, Matthew, for all of your amazingly helpful advice and resources, information and places to get to. I will put all of these on the show notes and links on the Quirky Voices website. So please do delve into there and have a good browse around for all of the information that you need. But yes, thank you, Matthew. You've been absolutely fantastic.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Sure, if you think you've been experiencing any of the things Matthew has mentioned, and huge thank yous to Matthew for joining us on the show, please do 100% as soon as is convenient call and make an appointment with your GP to discuss it. Go on. You owe it to yourself, right? And please feel free to check out more articles and information on the Epilepsy Action or Epilepsy Society website, or any of the links we've put on our Quirky Voices site. Or if you actually want to talk to someone from a charity that has knowledge and information and can point you in the right direction to help, call the Epilepsy Action hotline on 0808 800 5050. Gosh, reminds me of the adverts from 20 years ago. But it's not that. It's obviously very helpful. To speak to a real person. 0808 800 5050. So childish. Okay, yes. So go on, do one of those things at least. Get informed, get proactive, live your bestest deal, best life, peoples. And, I hope you found this a useful episode. We have one more next week on epilepsy before we look at eczema. And I get to tell you my story so far. Well, not all juicy bits. Probably some of the hardest parts, to be honest. But hey, don't let that put you off. So do tune in next week when the other pals turn up at the hospital to talk to Rachel and fathom how she's doing. And we hear more from Lucy, of course. Wonderful Lucy. Oh, no, I sung again. I said I wouldn't. Sorry.
Episode 8.
And from the lovely Hattie Hodgson-Chrome of Epilepsy Action on other resources worth pursuing for help and information. So, thanks so much again to my cast. I know it was just me and the amazing Lucy Shirley in today's episode, but thanks anyway to Diane Alexander, Kirsten Stansfield and Lara Parker for their moral support and friendly awesome, and to Fiona Thrail, who is the best executive producer you could ask for if you need a producer for your podcast. Well, why not ask her? Pay her handsomely, for she is good. And thanks again to Matt Hutt and Zach Lemon for this grooving music. And to Matthew Walker, of course, for his time and expertise today and for last week. And of course, again, to Lucy Shirley for coming on and sharing her wonderful thoughts and elements of, I guess, some of her scariest moments in her life so far. Let's hope the rest of it's lovely. So only remains for me to say hugs and happiness to you all in these crazy times. I do hope you're looking after yourself out there. It is tough, but we can get through this, right? We are and we will. Stay safe and this side of sane. I know I'm trying. Some would say very trying, but that's by the by. And bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye. Bye-bye. Speak next week, yeah? Ta-ta.